AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions. We're in your fields and by your side. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. Uptrending markets do not gap down. Uptrending markets don't trade limit down and surely don't close limit down. Uptrending markets don't do a lot of things that happen today. But I don't know anybody that is willing to say we've seen the high in any of the ag markets.
Live from Turn Down Thursday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we thunder into a weather conversation with the gang from BAM WX, Kirk Hinz and Michael Clark. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
You know what, Davis? The time of the year isn't right. Supplies are too tight. We haven't seen evidence that demand is slowing down. There's all kinds of reasons that people are saying you can't say that the high is in these markets.
These are all very pretty words, Chip.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. The simple fact that I don't know anybody that's willing to say the high is in these markets might be exactly why the high is in these markets.
Oh. So you're actually saying that we might all die penniless and insane. Still trying to grow stuff out of dirt. Dirt. You wash it off and get to the dinner table. Grow stuff out of dirt. Come on.
Come on.
Whose idea was any of this?
You can't do that. You can't
Ridiculous.
Do that. Exactly. No, it's a turning point. There is no question about it. This is the kind of volatility that everybody has been warning about basically since we put a buck and a half on corn, which turned into three, and basically since we put $2 onto beans, which turned into four, five, six. Okay? This is the kind of volatility that we've been preparing for. I just hope that everybody out there has been prepared for it, has taken the steps necessary to prepare for this type of market action.
Okay.
So with that in mind, I want to go through some of the things that happened in the markets today and take a look at some of the chart features that we need to be aware of.
But at the same time,
I don't want to get too shook up. The volatility is going to be around for a while. It's going to be difficult to recognize that the high has been made until it's proven that the high has been made. There's going to be times where this market is going to tease us because of the tight supplies and because of the lack of evidence that demand is slowing down. We're going to get teased so many times into thinking that the rally has restarted and there may be some false starts in here.
So your marketing advice at this point is just keep a clean pair of skivvies on hand and hang on for the ride.
Because you never know when there's going to be an accident. That's right. Yeah. All right, buddy. Let's get started and go through some of the news.
Well, Chip, trend line support in wheat futures was tested and broken by today's steep price declines in all three markets. Fundamentally, traders argue not much has changed for the markets, but the potential for drought relief in hard red winter wheat country was mentioned by some as a source of pressure. Export sales in the week ended May 6 totaled just 30,000 metric tons for old crop, with new crop sales of 268,000 metric tons, both tallies in line with trade expectations. The next level of support in July soft red wheat is at the breakout area at 680, with secondary support at the January and February highs near 670. July hard red winter wheat, 33 cents lower today, 657 and three quarters. July soft red fell 28 and one quarter to 701 and a half. September spring wheat, 23 and one quarter cents lower, 746 and three quarters. Chip.
Okay, looking at the July SRW contract, the Chicago wheat contract, we closed about 11 cents above the session lows. That reduces significantly. It doesn't eliminate, but it reduces the risk of a gap lower open in the overnight. If we can avoid that from happening, that 680 level, that was the highs that we posted oh, what was it, back on April 20th and April 21st before we got that big move through 680. And when we got our first close above 680 in this market, we closed over 710 on that day. So that's the breakout area that we're looking at in July SRW. We got to see if we can find buying interest at 680.
Well, export sales of corn in the weekend of May 6 were dominated by cancellations by China and unknown destinations. That resulted in a net sales reduction for the week of 113,000 metric tons. But there was some fresh buying for old crop delivery in the week, with Mexico and South Korea leading the way. New crop corn sales totaled 2.08 million metric tons, with China easily topping the list of buyers. Support at the steepest uptrend in July corn was broken today, and the close near session lows and below 680 points to a test of support near 640. July corn futures down the 40-cent daily trading limit, 674 and three quarters. September corn fell 38 and one half cents, 583. December corn closed at 558 and one quarter, down 34 and three quarter cents. I think it's the first time that I've reported on corn futures down the 40-cent daily trading limit.
Well, it would be since the limit up until...
down the limit, I guess I would say.
Yeah. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we've had some 25-cent moves when the limit was 25 cents, but it was expanded to 40 cents in starting in May. So this is the first 40-cent limit move that we can talk about for quite some time. Now, the uptrend drawn off the late March and late April lows was broken today. I'm talking about in the December contract. That's true in the July contract as well, but in that DEES contract that did not close limit down, we've got to contend with the fact that that uptrending support was broken.
Old crop bean export sales topped 94,000 metric tons, with new crop sales of nearly 103,000 tons. The combined tally was short of trade expectations and were off by about one-third from the four-week average. But any old crop sales should be considered add-on demand at this point of the marketing year. Even after today's price plunge, support of the uptrend drawn off the April 13 and April 30 price lows remains in place. Flat price support in July beans on this downside correction should be expected at $15.60 and again at the $15 breakout area. July bean futures 58 and one half cents lower, $15.84. August beans plunged 50 and one quarter cents, $15.22 and a quarter. November bean futures closed at $13.96 and one half, down 47 and a quarter today.
Believe it or not, we only had five closes above $14 in November beans, and four of them were higher. Four of them were higher before we had the plunge today and the close under $14.
Old crop cotton sales totaled 54,000 running bales, with new crop sales of 72,000 bales. Vietnam and China led the way on old crop. New crop sales were to Pakistan and Mexico. Uptrending support drawn off the March and April lows in July cotton remains in place. July cotton was 325 points lower, 84.98. December cotton fell 237, 83.30. Chip?
Yeah, and uptrending support was broken in the cotton market as well.
Excuse me, I can't even read any more of this.
You want me to finish it up for you?
No, I'm fine. Beef export sales, just over 13,000 metric ton, provided zero support in today's risk-off market. June fat cattle down the $3 limit, 115.60. Oct down 250, 124.05. August feeders fell 2.5 cents, 150.50. Pork export sales, 14,700 metric tons, were off about 25% from the four-week average. June lean hogs gapped lower, traded into the gap, but left it open through the close. June lean hogs a buck 92.5 lower, 110.10. August hogs off a buck 92.5, 105.72.5. Chip Lorre.
You know, that June hog contract, what it did was it did not fill this morning's gap, but it went down and filled that May 3 upside price gap, which should be solid support for the market now. We're talking weather coming up next. Michael Clark, Kirk Hinz, BAMWX, right here on AgriTalk.
American-based and family-run, Simplot Grower Solutions knows what it takes to keep a farm and your way of life productive and thriving. It takes field-proven insights backed by trusted technologies and products that help you get the most out of every acre. It takes a local ag expert you can grow with, a down-to-earth partner focused on your success. Head to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com and take the next step with us. Simplot Grower Solutions, in your fields, by your side.
Now, never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Here's a pretty decent summation from Twitter, Chip.
Okay, I'm willing.
At CornFirmer, just yes. moments ago, quote, "I'm thinking I heard hashtag AgriTalk say we needed to put on our seatbelt and helmet hashtagged at markets."
Yeah.
I mean, if that's one of those three-point harnesses you're talking about when you say seatbelt, with the kind that like clips your helmet to the back of the seat.
Well, if it's
I think that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, if it's coming from CornFirmer, then I'm sure that it will be NASCAR approved in mm-hmm. its safety requirements. Yes.
One of those cool fire suits, maybe? That'd be awesome.
I'm on huh? fire! Uh-huh. I'm on fire!
You're not on fire, Ricky Bobby. You're not on fire. Help me, Oprah Winfrey.
Hang on, Randy. We'll be okay. We'll make our way through it. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. And we're going to be talking weather today. And honestly, well, let's bring them in. Michael Clark, Kirk Hens, BAMWX.com. Welcome, fellas. How you doing?
Hey, Chip. Good. How are you?
Good, man.
Fantastic.
Yeah, great. You know what? I realized a little while ago that this has kind of become an annual tradition now. The day after the May supply and demand report, this is at least back-to-back years, and it might be 3 years in a row that we've done this, guys.
Yeah,
I think it's the three-peat.
It is.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it's the three-peat.
We were talking about the Memorial Day 2018 torch after our little show in 2018 when it got real hot there in late May, yes. and we were like, oh, I remember talking about that.
Yes.
So, yeah.
That's right.
Awesome.
That's right. Yeah. 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 So, well, you guys, man, I'm glad that we're continuing this tradition because everybody knows, or at least I hope everybody knows, that once we get past that May supply and demand report, USDA's first official look at the new crop marketing year on the balance sheets, weather becomes so important to the day-to-day, and the longer-term outlook for these grain markets that we've got to get a good idea of what to expect during the growing season. So let's start with this. Michael, if you would, we had an ENSO update today. What did it tell us? What should we learn from it?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, we're heading into a neutral ENSO year. The La Nina continues to fade. We continue to trend towards a neutral state. And in a nutshell, historical analogs or statistics would suggest the evolution of that process could favor some difficult growing conditions, especially in the northern part of the country this year. So, what essentially it's telling us is that, you know, we're going into this cooler neutral state. And I don't think we're not looking at a La Nina or an El Nino. We're looking at a cool neutral event. So that is going to carry weight in and of itself.
Okay. Now, when you say cool neutral event, are you talking about sea surface temperatures or are you talking about temperatures, actual temperatures here in the growing in the middle of the country?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'm talking about the equatorial Pacific Ocean temperatures. I'm talking about those from normal. So it would be, it would still be a cooler body of water slightly compared to the normal.
Okay. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Guys, either one of you, I know you look at a lot of different indicators around the globe and how that butterfly that flops its wings in Indonesia is going to impact our weather pattern on the 4th of July weekend. So tell me, what are you looking at right now?
Yeah, I can answer that one, Michael. That's an area that we call the IOD. It's called the Indian Ocean Dipole. It's a fancy term of what the sea surface temperatures are going on there. And essentially our research kind of shows that a positive IOD in the summer can lend to hot and dry conditions, a negative IOD, the direct opposite. We currently find ourselves in a positive IOD. So along with what he said, the ENSO neutral kind of allows conditions to be influenced by other drivers, and the IOD being positive is one of those. That's one of the reasons why our ears are perked up, why the hotter and drier risks are increasing as we get closer to this time frame, because you know, this other bigger pattern driver is starting to kind of rule the show a little bit. And you're already seeing the models trend drier in the short term in the northern U.S.
Okay. You know, Michael, we've got some areas in the United States. Well, in North America, I shouldn't just limit it to the United States. We've got some dry areas in the United States that have been developing for a while, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been – it's. I mean, you're coming off the driest stretch in U.S. history for the Northern Plains. It's never been as dry as it is there right now for this long. That's a fact. So we have that going right now. And you know, they need really, Chip, they need about 8 to 9 inches of water to catch up.
Yeah.
And that's just not, unfortunately, that's just not on the, in the cards right now. So okay. We've got a developing drought, a well-established drought in the West and Southwest and the Northern Plains right now. About the Northwestern third of our country is in a drought. The concerns are, as we're starting to see these drier trends over the Great Lakes and the Northern Plains, like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan. And so that's where the concern grows a little bit, perhaps for it to grow some, you know, okay, across the top.
Okay.
So,
hey, guys, what's the deal with that spot? And I mean, it is just a spot in eastern Nebraska, far western Iowa, that is really dealing with some impressive rain totals over the last 6 weeks or so.
You mean in terms of lack thereof or
no,
surplus?
No, all the rain that they have gotten. I mean, there's we had Tim Gregerson from Herman, Nebraska, just north of Omaha, on the show with us in the Farmer Forum on Wednesday, and his very specific area is ranked 124 out of the last 128 in wettest periods. And it's not a very big area. I mean, it is literally a spot, like six counties.
Yeah, it's very small. And, you know, there's been – Iowa's – it's been weird, Chip. Iowa's been a land of its own for, like, the last 5 years. It's like it always gets dry in Iowa in July. You know, it's like every year we've gotten dry in Iowa in the summer. And then you've got these super localized areas of enhanced, locally enhanced rainfall that, quite frankly, I don't have an explanation for it, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
But it is fascinating.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is. And then take us over to the far east of the Corn Belt as well, guys. Indiana, Ohio, and specifically Ohio. Some guys are complaining about, you know, not having many days of good in the field.
Yeah, well, I can answer that one, Kirk, if you want. I've got.
Oh no, go for it. Yeah, go for it.
I've got a 14-day percent of normal precip map pulled up, and the entire state of Ohio is about 250% of the normal rainfall. So they are on the polar opposite end of the spectrum in the eastern Corn Belt. It's incredibly wet, whereas in the northwestern half of the Corn Belt, it's very dry. I think if there's a spot this summer where it can stay cooler and wetter, it's definitely going to be the eastern Corn Belt, especially eastern Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio. You know, they stand a much better chance to stay cooler and to stay wetter this entire season. Yeah. And we're seeing that already. So,
yeah. Yeah, you know, that's one of those areas that I don't want to say that we tend to lose track of when it comes to the time of the growing season, because it feels like they've got an extended planting window that they can work with, but it's something that we need to pay attention to going forward, no question about that. I do want to bounce us back over to the west and into HRW country, because some of the pressure on the wheat markets today were out of the idea that here over the next week, Michael, that we might get some relief from, or some additional relief from, drought conditions. Are you seeing that?
I am. It's going to get really active down that way. The ensemble data coming in this morning and right now is supportive of that, especially there where it has been drier in the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma. The 30-day percent of normal precip's running about 25%, but I think that certainly There's relief coming there, and there's a lot of support in the model data for that. So it's nice to see that in those regions surfacing, you know, right now, and a little bit cooler too with those range chips. So really a more of a favorable pattern coming in the next 2 weeks for those folks.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, like the opposite of last year.
Yes. Right, Kirk. Yeah, the opposite of last year. Okay, guys, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to stay short term, but we're going to go a long ways from the Corn Belt when we come back, and I want to get an update on what to expect for the rest of the Safrina growing season, Kirk. I'm going to lean on you for that. And then after that, we're going to get a little bit longer term, and let's just go region by region and try to figure out what kind of a growing season we might be looking at across the Corn Belt. We're talking with Michael Clark and Kirk Hands from BAMWX.com right here on AgriTalk. Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bioproducts made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Colonial Pipeline is reopening. Return to normal will take time. Strategy Grain still expects a 10.2 million metric ton year-to-year jump in EU wheat production. Data shows inflation is back. The key unknown remains, is it transitory? As expected, Cheney demoted in-house for criticizing post-election moves. JBS reports first crop quarter profit, citing U.S. restaurant reopenings and strong exports to Asia. But they did say that high cattle and feed prices will continue to challenge its cattle feeding operations in Brazil for the near term. Steady to slightly higher cash cattle trade and hog weights are sliding. Average hog weights Iowa, southern Minnesota dropped 1.2 pounds in the last week. Try ProFarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
It's time to register for Farm Journal Field Days, Hay, Forage, and Cattle Edition, an interactive online event June 8th and 9th. Go to farmjournalfielddays.com.
Davis, did you notice that at Indiana Grain Co., you know who that is, has decided that we should go vintage with our restraint devices?
Vintage with the restraint devices, okay.
Yes. Yeah. So he's got a link for us to the vintage Starburst buckle for the seatbelts. It's pretty cool. It's very cool. As a matter of fact, it comes in 30 different colors.
Oh, 30. See, for me, the vintage seatbelt is old Uncle Ronnie reaching over and putting his hand across my chest when there's a deer in the road.
That's the restraint that I'm aware of, Yeah, exactly. Love it. All right, we're talking weather with Michael Clark and Kirk Hands. Before we get back to that conversation, Davis, go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat, 33 cents lower today, 657 and three quarters. September spring wheat, 23 and one quarter cents lower, 746 and three quarters. July corn futures down the 40 cent daily trading limit, 674 and three quarters. December corn closed at 5.58 and one quarter, down 34 and three quarter cents. July soybean futures 58 and one half cents lower, 15.84. November bean futures closed at 13.96 and a half, down 47 and one quarter. July cotton 325 points lower, 84.98. June live cattle down the $3 limit, 115.60. August feeders down 2.5 cents, 150.50. And June lean hogs, 192 and a half lower at 110.10. There's your quick market recap. Back to you.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, buddy. We'll have to see if that turns into follow through selling for tomorrow or not. We are talking weather today. Michael Clark, Kirk Hinz, BAMWX.com. Okay. Like I said, we're going to stay short term, but go a long ways from the Corn Belt and go down to Brazil, Kirk. Still a lot of attention being paid to the weather on that Safrinha corn crop. What should we expect?
Yeah, much of the same. In fact, I would go as bold as to say that they're seeing like our version of 2012 down there right now. And what I mean by that is there's been 0 inches of rain in areas like Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, you know, areas of Parana, Santa Catarina, Goya, some of these major Safrinha corn crop areas. There's been like 0 inches of rain in a lot of these areas the last 30 to 45 days, and it's been warmer. And it's going to continue to be the exact same pattern at least the next 2 to 3 weeks. So it's, just to put it frank, it's about as bad as it can get down there.
Wow. Okay. So
yeah,
we need to keep a downside bias on that Safrinha corn crop down there.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds. As you're saying that, Kirk, yeah, I can't help but thinking to myself, we've seen times in the past where conditions in South America are then replicated in the middle of the country in the U.S. during the growing season. You guys, is there a risk of that?
Yeah. I've actually heard of, I've heard and seen of some research like that. I'm not sure it's exactly one-to-one, but I do think in situations that we're currently seeing, there is some merit there. The global circulation overall would impact in a similar way South America and then in the future, you know, some areas in the central United States. So I can see some merit in that, you know, like Michael alluded to, you know, the Midwest, upper Midwest, Northern Plains, Canadian prairies. I think there's some merit to that. I think we could see some similar conditions, maybe not exactly the same as central Brazil seeing right now, but I'm not sure it's a coincidence anymore.
Gotcha. Okay. Guys, let's go through the growing season. Michael, I'm going to lean on you for the U.S. Mm-hmm. stuff here. Let's go up to the Northwest production areas, and this is the area that you've already described has been very dry. I'm going to call it the western one-third of Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, down into Northwest Iowa and Northern Nebraska. What do you see happening in that area?
That's essentially the area that is our biggest concern. I'm worried about a very significant drought in that area continuing. And the tendencies for the summer heat to be focused there, arguably, you know, obviously because of the current situation, you know, and my concern is just that continues. So, you know, when we look at similar analog years that you could compare to 01, 03, 06 are some years that are really sticking out to us. But, you know, I'm just concerned that it's very warm and probably very dry there, at least at this distance right now.
Okay. That doesn't sound very encouraging when we think about when, you know, that's the area that we're picking up acres from a year ago because we're getting those prevent plant acres back. Well, you can put the seed in the ground, but you got to have Mother Nature, you know, cooperate with us a little bit. Okay, Western Iowa, the rest of Nebraska, mm-hmm. Kansas, Northern Missouri. What are you thinking?
Yep. Probably a little bit better there. It might still be a little bit drier than normal in some spots. Interesting fact, Kansas, the last several summers, overall, it's been pretty wet there. It tends to do that. It's going to be very wet there the next couple weeks. Don't see any huge problems there. They may be underneath on the bottom side of a ridge where there's some return flow. My concern is if that ridge parks or establishes in the west, northern U.S.-ish area, that it could shut off precip there, but keep precip good further south. The southern Corn Belt, I think, can be warmer than average, but I also don't think they're looking at a major deficit of precipitation of any kind. So maybe a best term for them right now could be somewhat of a normal growing season, just a little bit warmer.
Okay. All right. Kirk, we're about to slide a little bit south of the Corn Belt. Anything to add with what Michael has talked about there?
No, I think exactly what Michael said, and a lot of times you can see the summer pattern setting up, you know, into April and May in terms of where the storm track is. So the fact that the next 2 to 3 weeks is very wet in that area, you can bring it all the way down to the Missouri, Tennessee Valley, Southern Ohio Valley. That's likely where the greatest tendency of where it's just going to continue. Okay. So I think where it's wet is probably where it's going to stay wetter.
Okay. All right. Very good. Now, like I said, I want to move south and out of the Corn Belt here for just a second, Michael. Oklahoma, okay. Texas, Southern Plains, you know, the sorghum growing season, finishing off the winter wheat crop.
I think you're could be drier in that in the western half of that region and wetter in the eastern half with above normal temperatures. I do think at times there could be some pretty intense heat. At times this summer, if we see that angular momentum that we've talked about years past dip negative with the neutral, cool neutral Enzo, you can get some pretty significant heat waves pretty quickly. I would watch for that in those regions.
Okay. All right. Got it. Now let's move to the east. Arkansas, down to Louisiana, the Gulf states, the importance of the production of corn, soybeans, cotton in these areas has been increasing. What should we expect?
Very wet, much above normal precipitation patterns, especially in the month of June, late May into June, especially, and probably cooler than normal from the added precipitation risks. So I think a below normal temperature and above normal precipitation outlook for those areas, I would say a little bit higher than normal confidence in that call as well, Chip.
Okay. North Central, the rest of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Northern Iowa, Northern Illinois, what to expect?
Kirk, correct me if I'm wrong, but I still think there's a drier risk there, especially June, not so much July. Because you could have some of that ring of fire pattern, those thunderstorm clusters can be possible in those regions. So I am a little worried about an above average severe weather season in those regions because of that ridge establishment being possible. Not as dry, but, you know, dry in the west half, a little wetter east. You know, if you take that, Chip, if you go Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, for example,
okay,
I think you could be above average. I think you could be above average precip and near normal temperatures there. So you can kind of see the gradient as we've talked about these areas, how it slides south and east. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I can see it. Absolutely, I can.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's kind of the process there.
Yeah, that's the Corn Belt. That hammers out the Corn Belt. The guys in Pennsylvania and New York would be disappointed if I wouldn't ask about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, above normal precip, cooler risks are definitely on the table. And
continuing that pattern.
Because those MCSs can be long-lived. They can travel east for several hundred miles. And, you know, I just think there could be some of those, you know, risks can extend east. But a cooler and wetter summer is on the table for the eastern third of the U.S. for sure.
Okay. Now let's jump all the way over to the other side of the country in the PNW and take that into the Canadian prairies, I would assume.
Yep. Kirk, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I think especially the Canadian prairies, I mean, I think there could be some significant dryness in those areas. I mean, we're already seeing it in that, and that's because there's a split flow jet stream, a lot of high pressure in those areas. So I would say the drought that has been developing in those areas would be more prone to linger in those, from the PNW to the Canadian prairies for sure.
All right. All right, man. We've covered the regions. Fellas, any place else around? Oh man, we're out of time. I can't even ask a follow-up question. I can't believe that. Wow. You guys, it is so good to have you guys as a partner here on AgriTalk. I appreciate your help so much. I appreciate you guys. I appreciate everything you do. Thank you, man.
Thank you guys. Thanks so much.
You bet. All right. That is Michael Clark and Kirk Hinz from BAMWX.com. Okay, what's it all mean? We'll try to piece it together and What does the trade look like this summer? We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
All right, welcome back. Wow, they went through all the areas, didn't they, Davis?
They hit all the hot spots,
Michael
yeah.
Clark, yeah, Michael Clark, Kirk Hands, BAMWX.com. They did a great job. Great job. Now, we just have to see how much of this actually happens. And, you know, one of the reasons that I like talking with with Michael and Kirk as much as we do is because they do – and you know, there are other weather people that I enjoy talking with. I mean, Kevin Marcus was on not that long ago. Ed Valley yep. does a great job. There are others that I'm thinking about. Kyle Tapley's out there and others that that I pay a lot of attention to. And, you know, I check out through Pro Farmer, I check out what Drew Lerner at World Weather has to say just about every morning. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of mm-hmm. them out there. And I will say that it's a consensus. It's a consensus that the risk for this growing season is that in the western, northwestern areas in particular, that we will see some threats to yield potential at some point during the growing season. And so when I talk about what I think trade might look like this summer, in the middle of the growing season, mm-hmm. I think it's important to understand that these ideas are built on the idea or are built on the fact that demand is showing very little sensitivity to price right now. We talked right. about that yesterday. That's yep. true on corn. That's true on soybeans. Criminy sakes, we sold another 680,000 metric tons of corn to China. What, yesterday we had another new mm-hmm. crop sale that was today. We had a new crop sale to Mexico yesterday. Importers need the product, and it's almost like a price be damned kind of attitude.
Right.
They're going to get it bought. So there's that. The other thing that I am basing a lot of my thoughts on is that stocks are tight. And we saw the numbers from USDA yesterday. Sure, okay, 1.5 billion bushels is less tight than 1.25 billion bushels, but it's still tight, okay? It's still on the tight side of supplies. And then I don't care if you're talking about 120 million bushels or 140 million bushels of soybeans, supplies are tight. So strong demand that is insensitive or showing insensitivity to price, and tight existing stocks through the growing season, even with a record corn yield and even with a trendline bean yield. Okay? I mean, those are big assumptions to make. Huge assumptions to make. So with all of that in mind, what do you think the odds are that we're going to have some kind of a weather scare on these markets in the middle of the summer? I think the odds are exceptional. The question is, have we already traded it? Have we already traded that weather scare? If we have, then, okay, maybe the highs are in. But odds are we've traded one of three weather scares, and there's two more weather scares to trade, or we've traded two of five, and there's three more to come. You know, whatever it is, we have not fully accounted for all of the crop uncertainty that we are going to deal with during the 2021 growing season. I just don't think that is the case.
Well, now, and
go ahead.
If we're thinking about kind of the psychological aspect of this, right? But yeah. Go back to the toilet paper thing.
Okay.
Go back to this gas thing, right? People yeah. are hypersensitive to the potential for yeah. shortages, for prices going higher. I just wonder if some of that doesn't get back into, you know, go up to the commercial buyers, to the end users, and then, but you know, thereby making them hypersensitive to any sort of weather event.
Oh, dude.
That might mean it doesn't even necessarily take an actual event. Just the suggestion that an event might be eventful. It's like, oh my, we got to get in there. We don't have enough corn. We don't have enough corn.
Think about the end users and those that are in charge of accumulating a year's worth of supply for the processors that are out there, whether it be, a now expanded fleet of Poet ethanol refineries. I don't know if anybody's seen the word on that, but Poet's getting bigger today. It looks like Flint Hills is getting smaller. I think that's what's happening out there. I probably shouldn't have said anything until I knew more and had confirmation. But I think that's what's happening out there. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Nah.
But think about the grain merchandisers for these processors that have just spent the last 8 months, 9 months thinking, well, you know what? Should I go? Should I extend the coverage? No, I'm going to wait. Oh, geez, I should have extended. Well, I'll get enough to get us by for now. Well, I'll get it's been hand to mouth, hand to mouth, hand to mouth.
Yep.
If you give them a good enough setback, they're going to jump all over it and get that extended coverage. I don't think there's any question about it. So do we make new highs? I don't know. But I would say that the odds are really, really, really good that we will at least test the old highs again. Keep this in mind. Keep this amount in mind. If we are in a drought markets end before the drought does. So watch what's going on up in the northern plains. Demand can extend a weather market. If demand doesn't slow down, that's what a lot of this is based on. Then the markets can digest some rain. You've got to see a slowdown in demand in this market. You've got to see a slowdown in demand along with some relief from the weather to lock in that high. All right? Okay. Here.
Wow.
For Davis, thank you for listening today. Tomorrow morning, we've got a free-for-all going. Wiesmeyer Haney and Iowa farmer Tim Burrock. And tomorrow afternoon, Darren Fry, Water Street Solutions. I'll run some of these thoughts by Darren, see what he thinks. Tomorrow afternoon on AgriTalk.